In our morning worship, we are currently studying the Gospel according to St. Luke, and we are in the middle of the ninth chapter, the story of the healing of the epileptic boy down in the valley after the transfiguration of Christ. Now, can I just say that Luke's account of this healing of the epileptic child is a very basic and skeletal account, and he misses out quite a number of details that are recorded by Matthew and Mark. And so I think we should read part of the same story as recorded by Matthew and Mark, bringing out the highlights of the incident. You find the incident recorded in Matthew chapter 17 and at the 14th verse, following the Transfiguration. Verse 14 of Matthew 17, "And when they came to the crowd," that's Jesus and the three disciples who had been up the mountain, "a man came up to him and, kneeling before him, said, 'Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers terribly.'" And in fact, only Matthew says that the boy was epileptic. "For often he falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him." And Jesus answered, "O faithless and perverse generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him here to me." And Jesus rebuked him, and the demon came out of him. Now, of course, that's another dimension, because not all epileptics are manipulated by the demonic. But this is the case here. Jesus rebuked him, and the demon came out of him, and the boy was cured instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "How could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain," pointing to the Mount of Transfiguration, down which they had just come, "you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible to you." Now, the same story is recorded in Mark at the ninth chapter and at verse 14. And again, there are lots of details that you don't find in Matthew. "And when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd about them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw Jesus, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, 'What are you discussing with them?' And one of the crowd answered him, 'Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a dumb spirit. And wherever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able.' And he answered them, 'O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me.' And they brought the boy to him. And when the Spirit saw Jesus, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has he had this?" And he said, "From childhood. And it has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have pity on us, help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible to him who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and spoke these famous words, "I believe, help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You dumb and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse. So that most of them, the pessimists in the crowd, said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." And Luke's account is in Luke chapter 9 and at verse 37. You can see it's a much more basic account. On the next day, when they had come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, a great crowd met him. And behold, a man from the crowd cried, "Teacher, I beg you to look upon my son, for he is my only child." There's a new dimension. "And behold, a spirit seizes him, and he suddenly cries out. It convulses him till he foams and shatters him and will hardly leave him." Dr. McFarlane, I think someone's in need over here. In the middle of the man's conversation with Jesus, he says, "I beg your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Verse 41, Jesus answered, "O faithless and a perverse generation, how long am I to be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon tore him and convulsed him. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit and healed the boy and gave him back to his father. And all were astonished at the majesty of God. Amen. May God add a blessing to the reading of his holy word. To his name be the honor and the praise. In our study of the gospel according to St. Luke, we turn this morning to the healing of the epileptic boy. And it's a mark of Luke's compassionate eye as a physician that he is the only one of the first three gospel writers to tell us that this epileptic boy was an only son and was therefore precious and special to his father. In the same way, it's only Luke who tells us that the son of the widow of Nain was an only child, and so he was his only, the visible support for his mother. And again, it's only Luke who tells us that Jairus' daughter was an only child. Luke was a doctor, and these are all characteristic of his humanity and his care as a physician. The man comes to Jesus and he says in verse 38, Teacher, I beg you to look upon my son, for he is my only child. And it's significant that all the three gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, put this miracle immediately after the story of the Transfiguration. And there is, in fact, purpose and meaning to that, because the gospel writers want deliberately to emphasize the contrast between the one story, the Transfiguration of Christ, and the other story, the impotence of the disciples in the valley. And that is the heart of the message. These two stories, the Transfiguration of Jesus and the impotent disciples in the valley, these two stories are set side by side for a purpose. There are one or two interesting and important things to notice, first of all, by way of introduction. It's interesting, for example, that each of these two stories contains a father and a son. Up on the mountaintop, Jesus was having communion with his father. And as he talked with his father, the glory of the world to come streamed through him. And Peter was embarrassed by the eternal world, as so many people are embarrassed by the eternal world. And it was Peter who suggested that, well, perhaps they could build three tents, a tent for Moses, and a tent for Elijah, and a tent for Jesus, as if these three men were all on the same level, as if Jesus were simply a second Moses, another lawgiver, or as if Jesus were just another Elijah, another prophet. And it was at this point that the cloud came down and obliterated Moses and Elijah, hiding them from view until Jesus was left alone. And the voice said, "This is my son. He's not the same as Moses and Elijah. He's more than a lawgiver. He is more than a prophet. This is my son. Listen to him." Up on the mountain, a father and a son. And down in the valley, another father and a son in deep distress. The father said, "Behold, a spirit seizes him and he cries out. It convulses him until he foams and shatters him and will hardly leave him." And Jesus answered, "Bring your son here." Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit and healed the boy and gave him back to his father. Down in the valley, a father and a son. And of course, the thing that holds the mountaintop, Father and Son, and the valley, Father and Son, together, is the love and the care that bound them together. Each of the fathers, the heavenly Father on the mountaintop and the earthly Father in the valley, could say, "This is my Son. I love him. He is mine. He is special." Each of the stories contains a father and son. The second interesting thing to notice is this. If you take the three men on the mountain, Moses and Elijah and Jesus, each of them was associated with mountains. Moses was associated with Mount Sinai, where he received the Ten Commandments from God. Moses was also associated with Mount Pisgah, from the top of which he viewed the promised land, but could not enter. And in fact, Moses died on Mount Pisgah and was buried in an unknown grave. And here is this mountain man, Moses, with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. Elijah also was associated with mountains. He was associated, of course, with Mount Carmel, where he had his famous contest with the priests of Baal, the God who answers by fire. Let him be God. Elijah was also associated with Mount Horeb, which is away far down in the south, in the modern Sinai Peninsula. You remember that Elijah was heartbroken after Mount Carmel because the revival didn't come. And in a spirit of discouragement and depression, he ran the whole length of the land of Palestine down to Mount Horeb near Sinai. And there he went to a cave. He's associated with Mount Horeb. And here is Elijah, this second mountain man, in the mountain with Moses and Jesus. And of course, Jesus too is associated with mountains. There is the Mount of the Beatitudes, where he preached the Sermon on the Mount. There is Mount Calvary, where he was crucified. There is the Mount of Olives, from which he ascended to heaven, and to which, according to the prophet, at the last day, he will come. The Old Testament says that when Christ comes again, his feet shall stand upon the Mount of Olives. And here he is with Moses and Elijah, the mountain men, on the top of Mount Tabor. And you may ask, well, what's the significance of that? Well, just this, that in each case, there is a contrast between what is happening on the top of the mountain and what is happening down in the valley. Take Moses, for example. Moses was on Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, and he was having deep fellowship with God. He was being transformed by God's intimate presence and friendship. And while that was going on the top of Mount Sinai, down in the valley, Aaron and his sister Miriam were organizing the worship of the golden calf. You remember they got all the ladies in Israel to hand in their jewelry. And from the gold, they made a golden bull something they'd seen in Egypt, because that's part of Egyptian religion. Up on the mountain, fellowship and communion with God. Down in the valley, paganism. You find the same contrast in the story of Elijah. Up on Mount Carmel, there was the resounding victory over the priests of Baal and their utter rout and confusion by Elijah. But while that was going on the top of Mount Carmel, down in the valley, the children of Israel still went on incorporating the religion of Jezebel into the worship of Jehovah. They were saying their prayers to pagan gods. Up on the mountain, glory, triumph, victory. Down in the valley, the heathendom and the godlessness and the ignorance. And it's exactly that kind of contrast that you find here in the transfiguration of Christ. Up on the mountaintop, there was the glory breaking through Christ. The eternity was breaking through Christ. The voice of God acknowledged Christ as his beloved Son. Up on the top of the mountain, but down in the valley, there were 9 impotent disciples, incapable of helping a father and his epileptic son in their extremity and their need. And the intended contrast is between the glory and the glow on the top and the darkness and the impotence and the despair in the valley. If you know anything at all about art, you may know that Raphael has a great painting of the Transfiguration, and he brings this out very beautifully in the painting. He paints both the scenes on the one canvas, and one half of the canvas is taken up by the light and the glory and the wonder of the Transfiguration. And the other half of the same canvas is darkened by the despairing father and the demented boy. And I believe that the real heart of the message here lies in this contrast. The glory and the fellowship and the marvels of mountaintop experiences contrasted with the darkness and the despair and the hopelessness of the valley. And I suppose that this contrast is something that lies at the heart of all Christian witness. You see, the problem of Christian witness is this: how do you get the glory and the glow and the wonder and the fellowship and the thrill of the mountaintop down into the valley? As Christians, I think we're all good at mountaintop experiences. We enjoy spiritual experiences. We enjoy worship, and we enjoy prayer. We enjoy the word. We enjoy fellowship. Peter said, "Master, it is good for us to be here. And of course it is good for us to be here. But you cannot live on the top of a mountain. It's good to be on the top of the mountain. But how do you communicate the glory and the glow and the wonder of the mountaintop to the people living in despair in the valley? How do you get Jesus down into the darkness? Well, I think there are two messages here, and in fact, there are two ways of getting Jesus down. The first is the obvious one. You climb down to where the people are. And that's what Jesus did. I was having a chat with my friend James Philip last night on the phone, and he pointed out that what happened on the Mount of Transfiguration is really a parable of the Christmas story. Jesus turned his back on the glory of intimate communion with his Father. Jesus set aside his majesty and his privileges and his rights as the divine Son. He divested himself of his glory and he came down the mountain to become one of us. And so what Jesus did at his birth at Bethlehem, he did again on the Mount of Transfiguration. He left the glory behind and he came down into the valley. And he came down to where we are in the valley. And that is partly how you get the glory and the glow of the mountaintop down into the valley. You climb down to where the people are. And you try to see as they see. And you try to understand as they understand. And perhaps you may have to learn to live as they live and learn to feel as they feel. Climbing down into the valley is a part of true evangelism, bringing down the mountaintop experience to the people living in the darkness. But there's another way of getting the top of the mountain down into the valley. Matthew tells us that the boy was an epileptic. And literally speaking, an epileptic in that world was reckoned to be somebody who had been taken over. In fact, that's the meaning of the word, epilepsy. Epilepsy is two Greek words, and it means a takeover. And the Greeks believed that epileptics were not sick. They were special people, because it was felt that when they were throwing their convulsions and their seizures, they had been taken over by the gods or taken over by demons. And the Greeks used to treat epileptics with great respect and sometimes with great honor. They had been taken over, epilepsis, by the spiritual world. And I wonder if that rings a bell with you as it rings a bell with me today in our contemporary world. we do live in a time when people are being taken over by powers and influences greater than themselves and greater than they understand. I'm interested that Christian theologians are now speaking again about the demonizing of humanity, of men and women being taken over, epilepsis, by sinister powers, and of nations being taken over, and of ideologies and philosophies and movements being taken over, epilepsis, and of situations becoming demonized and manipulated for evil purposes. And it's not too much to say that what we are seeing in our age is an epileptic world that is being taken over and used and orchestrated by the demonic. Well, what do the theologians mean by the demonizing of humanity? They mean situations that get out of control and go beyond the rational and beyond the natural and beyond the human. And they go from a situation of control into the irrational and the unnatural and even the barbaric. I believe that the rise of fascism in the 1930s was a demonic thing. I believe that the North of Ireland situation is in many ways now a demonized situation. Men and women are being taken over. Epilepsis. The hatred of the Arabs for the Jews is now a demonic thing. The rise of evangelical Islam is now a demonic affair. The drug scene, the worship of pleasure, and the spirit of self-destruction that you find in society, the mindless violence of people who not only destroy property and other people, but who destroy themselves. All these suggest that we are now living in an epileptic humanity. Men and women are taken over. And the problem is, how do you bring the glory and the glow of the mountaintop down to an epileptic humanity? Jesus has the answer. His disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out? Why could we do nothing?" Jesus said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. The only way, according to Jesus, to change the takeover in the valley, the epilepsis of men and women and situations down in the valley, the only way to change that is by believing prayer. Jesus said, this kind can not be driven out by anything but prayer. Not by more parish development programs, which were of limited value. Not by more stewardship campaigns, which were of limited value. Not by special courses on the eldership of limited value. Not more committee meetings. This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. Would you like to change personally as a Christian? Do you feel you need to change as a Christian? Or are you perfectly satisfied with yourself the way you are? If you are, may God have mercy on your soul. You are of all men or all women the most to be pitied. If you're satisfied with yourself the way you are, would you like to change as a Christian? Would you like this church to change? Would you like the moral standards of Inverness to change? Would you like the state of marriage in Inverness to change? Would you like the spiritual condition of Scotland to change? The old preachers used to say, the secret of prayer is prayer in secret. The secret of failure is failure in secret. And the secret of power is power in secret. Down in the valley, we are surrounded by a demonized humanity. Epilepsis taken over. If you want to change it, Jesus says, this is not my opinion, Jesus says, there's only one answer. This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. I wonder if you have the courage to rise to the challenge of that. Amen. May God add a blessing to the preaching of his word. To his name be honor and praise. Our closing hymn. Make me a captive, Lord, and then I shall be free. Force me to render up my sword, and I shall conqueror be. 464.